We've got a great agenda for you today. As I mentioned, the number of customers that will be over the next few years moving and migrating to S/4HANA are going to be very significant. You'll hear me talk a little bit later that right now less than 20% of SAP's install base has made the move to S/4HANA. We think it's well below 20%, so it could be more in the 10% range. SAP hasn't really been too forthright about what that exact percentage is, but the real takeaway from that is it's a very meaningful number of customers that need to make that move. So we think we've got a great webinar for you. In order to tee that up and set that up for you properly, I think it's important to talk about what SAP's ambitions are and what they see their company evolving to over the next few years up through 2020. And then from that, we'll transition into how you go through an approach defining your S/4HANA journey. That'll be done by John Belden, who runs our project execution advisory service. And then John will transition it to Len, who will take you through many key considerations about establishing your next generation SAP agreement. Could be for existing customers, and then certainly these same components would apply for net new customers. And then we'll round it out, obviously, with a recommended path forward. And certainly, given the intensity of this topic, we do expect a lot of questions during the panel, and we'll do our best to address some of those during the session. Okay, let's talk about SAP's 2020 ambitions. You know, first one is overall revenue, eclipsing up to $28 to $29 billion in revenue. SAP has certainly made moves over the past year to improve their operating profit. They've made a lot of capital investments over the past several years in data centers. Certainly what they've articulated recently is they're moving away from making additional investments in that CapEx space for those data centers and leveraging more of a multi-cloud infrastructure model with other players such as Microsoft's Azure, Google, and then certainly Amazon's web services as well. This will allow them to stretch and reach these operating profit goals that they've set for 2020. Cloud subscription revenue, expecting, again, very meaningful and significant growth, up to €8 billion in revenue. And this is tied to a commitment that they've made previously and one that they've reinforced, that they expect cloud revenue growth of 30% at a compounded annual growth rate, very significant for them. And as another leading indicator for SAP, you know, in 2018, they will expect for the first time that their cloud revenue will actually surpass their software license revenue. Very meaningful, and then certainly in the not-too-distant future, and this could occur maybe within the 2020 timeframe, that their actual cloud revenue will be the largest base of their overall total revenue. That would even surpass on-premise software license revenue as well as the corresponding maintenance. Again, I think the key thing that should be taken away from this particular slide is the bottom piece there, that less than 20% have migrated or implemented S/4HANA. It's actually well less than that for as far as the number of go-live HANA implementations that are out there. So huge opportunity for SAP, and certainly a leading indicator of how existing SAP customers should expect SAP to be approaching them in the market. What's SAP's vision for the future? It's all tied to what they're defining as the intelligent enterprise. And the intelligent enterprise, the best way to think about that is taking a core system, taking additional corresponding or ancillary systems in a modular fashion, integrating them all together, connectivity from the core systems to additional horizontal systems all the way out to ultimately to the end customer and consumer. It's connectivity end to end throughout the entire supply chain. And it really first starts with the digital core. And SAP's view of this is finding a way where you have unstructured data or data that is residing in a very decentralized manner and governing it in very much a centralized fashion. And part of that starts with their foundation. Now, their digital core, they've made a commitment that ultimately their integrated suite, which historically has been on-premise, is making a total move to the cloud. And that's the first piece of how they anticipate winning overall long-term in the cloud. It's taking their core offering of ERP and moving it to the cloud. And that's already occurred. And that's the importance and critical nature of them going out and selling S/4HANA in the marketplace. Now, where they expect to also win in that same pace is taking a lot of their line of business solutions and also elevating them to the cloud. And those are a lot of different solutions that they've, in some cases, built organically, and a lot of other cases, the predominant number of cases, gone out and acquired in the market. So these lines of business solutions could be within the HCM space for SuccessFactors. It could be within the customer experience space with Hybris and Gigya. And then certainly in that same space with the acquisition of Callidus Software. And the Callidus Software offering certainly allows them to compete head-on and more directly with Salesforce, specifically within the CRM space. And then lastly, where SAP expects to win in the cloud and is differentiating itself is really in the platform space. So this is a combination of HANA, which to some extent can be database as a service. In that HANA space, SAP has committed that by the end of 2018, they will have all of their cloud portfolio on HANA. So ultimately, by doing that, they're going to remove any competitive threat of other databases as the underlying foundation supporting their cloud portfolio. In this same space, SAP has come out with SAP Cloud Platform, which allows them to integrate with other cloud solutions. In addition, they've launched their SAP Data Hub, which again is their way of taking decentralized data and not necessarily forcing their customers to push that data back into SAP, but allows them to orchestrate and govern that data more from a centralized manner, but having the data still distributed. So these three pillars ultimately are their vision for the intelligent enterprise, which is how they're going to be approaching and going to market with all customers moving forward. Okay, with that, we'll turn it over to John Belden, who again runs our Project Execution Advisory Service. And John will take you through our recommendations and best practice considerations for companies considering their S/4HANA journey.
Thanks, Dave, and good morning. For those that are in the U.S. and those that have joined us from Europe, good afternoon. I'm going to start with kind of a slide that outlines what's on the CIO's plate. And you can see from the slide that there is a lot of things. I mean, whether it comes from AI to Internet of Things, cost containment, variable cost management, the CIO clearly has a lot. And from what Dave described on SAP's marketing strategy, SAP is going after solving all of the CIO's problems. So it's no longer just the ERP company. And along with trying to solve all their problems, they're also going after and marketing to the entire organization. They're bringing those line of business tools to the CFO, the CPO, the CMO, and the COO. This puts the CIO not only in the role of chief technologist, but in the case of road mapping and in developing a journey, also puts them in the role of the chief collaborator. They have the responsibility of really aligning the entire organization on the sequence of events, on how companies need to move from their business suite platform over to the S/4HANA platform. One of the most important things that a CIO can be doing now, and Len's going to touch on this later, is working with the C-suite to convey to them the leverage that they currently have with SAP, with a huge amount of customer volume that needs to make the switch over to S/4HANA. SAP is actively engaged in working to encourage customers to be able to make this move, and this is when you're going to enjoy your greatest leverage, and Len will talk about that later. So let's talk about what a roadmap is. Basically, the roadmap is a high-level plan that outlines the intended route or journey that a company is going to take from its current state capabilities into its future or aspirational state capabilities. And in the case of SAP, this is mapping from your current version of Business Suite or ECC over to some future state of S/4HANA that's supported by all of the product lines that Dave mentioned. An effective roadmap is one that is embraced by all levels of the organization. When I say all levels, I'm really referring to the C-level, and is practically actionable. Now, what do I mean by practically actionable? It basically has to answer all of the fundamental questions of who, what, when, where, how, and why. Oftentimes, companies take on a specific initiative within the organization. You'll hear this referred to as a phase zero, ripping a page out of the Agile playbook, where companies spend a lot of time really developing this roadmap. And Len will show you, as we put out our roadmap on how to do this, where we see this fitting in. In order to be able to have this effective roadmap and answer each one of those questions of who, what, where, when, and how, what we're going to go into now is some considerations for each one of those questions and what you should be thinking about as you answer them. So let's start with the question of why. The fundamental question of why really revolves around the business case for S/4HANA. And over the past few years, this really has been the knock on SAP and S/4HANA is, you know, we don't know what the business case is, and it's hard to justify to make the move. However, we're beginning to see some recent movements in this space on the justification. Recently, you may have seen that Hershey has made an announcement that they're moving to S/4HANA, and Hershey tends to be a company that is a first mover in this space, and I expect that we're going to see a lot of other companies begin to follow what Hershey's doing and how they're and how successful they are with this implementation. The business case itself is usually defined as a deliverable to launch any project, and oftentimes used as, I'll call it, the justification for a project. And too many times, from our perspective, the business case is developed and then set on the shelf. From my perspective, in the Project Execution Advisory Group, the business case is the bedrock for being able to make decisions throughout the project itself. And when you test your business case and look at that business case, the question that you have to ask yourself as a company in developing your roadmap is, has this business case provided us with a platform that is going to allow us to make decisions as we go throughout this journey? The second question that you need to ask is this question of when do I start the journey and how long should the journey take? And there are a number of things to consider in this space, so I'm only going to be able to touch on a couple. The first one that, you know, many companies don't think about is that there is going to be a market tipping point. There's going to be enough companies now that have waited to actually make the move to S/4HANA, and it's natural to think that a lot of companies are going to make the move at the same time. When they make this move at the same time, what you're going to see within the marketplace, obviously, is a scarcity of resource. When a scarcity of resource comes along, you see a price increase, and you also see the quality dips. So companies are going to need to time when they actually make this move and take into consideration this tipping point. The other thing that companies need to think about is the increasing gap between the S/4HANA platform and the Business Suite platform. SAP has announced that while they're going to be making updates to the Business Suite platform, they are not going to be making updates at the same pace or level or capabilities as what they're going to have for S/4HANA. And in this case, we're going to see this gap of capability increase over time. And as the gap of capability increases, naturally what that means is that the cost of making the move from your current platform to the S/4HANA platform is going to increase. I'm going to speak about some mitigations for that later when we get into the how. But those are two really important points as you come up with the when that you're going to want to address. The next question is on where. Where in the case of the S/4HANA platform is going to be, do we make this move into the public cloud? Do we make it into the private cloud? Or do we continue to go on-prem? Most of the activity that we've seen and that we've been a part of recently have been on-prem or private cloud. But we actually see this changing and going to change over time, that we will see more of a move to the public cloud as that software becomes more mature. What we anticipate is small and medium business companies can realize substantial value in the ability to rapidly integrate the entire SAP toolset, and they will position themselves to be first movers to new technology as that platform becomes more mature. They're going to be able to take advantage of the new capabilities that SAP is going to roll out. The next question that companies are going to need to answer as a part of their road mapping then is how. And, you know, the typical things that come up in the how is greenfield or brownfield, and which way companies approach that. One area I do want to touch on in this how, though, is the area that we're seeing on what I'm going to refer to as core simplification. We're seeing a number of companies take the strategy of implementing the line of business products from SAP. So that would be the Hybris, the Ariba, the Concur, Fieldglass, and others, taking capabilities out of their core ERP system, moving it into the line of business systems with the intent of simplifying the amount of dependence on the core ERP. In doing so, they're actually reducing the expected cost of the move to S/4HANA in the future because they really kind of reduce the total number of capabilities that they have within their existing ERP system, thereby reducing the amount of gap that they have in jumping to the S/4HANA. The next question I want to touch on is on the who. One of the things that we're seeing with the broad footprint that SAP is pitching here is the lines are blurring between the services provided by the systems integrator, your software provider, the traditional hosting and AMS providers, as well as different capabilities from niche providers that may specialize specifically in some of these line of business tools. And we're encouraging companies to develop a strategy that really looks at all of those providers holistically and allows them to be able to compete not in their own, let's say, line with competing SI with SI, but also allowing the SIs to compete with SAP, compete with the hosting providers, and the services space that might overlap. One of the things that I would advocate for all of our clients to get started, though, is to focus primarily on the internal skill sets that they're going to need to make this move. Specifically thinking about internal architects, as well as the internal technologists that are going to be responsible, as well as the program or project managers. We would advise going out and getting training in this area and coming up to speed. And Len's going to speak a little bit about how they might get educated when he lays out our plan. The other thing that we would advocate on the internal side is proper consideration of the legacy base. One of the things that companies get caught off guard with sometimes on these large transformations is the amount of capacity that they need on the legacy side in order to be able to facilitate integration, facilitate conversions, facilitate data standardization and the like. And we would advise our clients to consider their legacy capabilities and the capacity and building up contingency in this area. And then the final area is the what to buy. And it has been notorious, I would say, really difficult to kind of sort through the SAP tool set over the last decade or so as they change the product lines, as they reconfigure the product lines and redefine it. They're not only changing the product lines and they change the parameters and they change kind of the contract structure. And, you know, at best, this is a complex proposition, and at worst, it's a money trap. And this is one of the things that Len is going to cover in his specific part of the agenda that we're going to lead into now.
So, Len, hey, John, just real quick before we move on there, just one of the questions in the who space. You know, given SAP's got just a little over 1,500 live S/4HANA implementations, and probably half of those are net new customers. Do we have a point of view on, you know, the experience base within the market today from the system implementation firms? And considerations as far as going out and sourcing those?
Yeah, what we've seen to date, Dave, is that the systems integrators are really developing, I'll say, competencies in two areas. One is on road mapping and really helping companies kind of sort through what's in the product line and what are the capabilities. A little bit of caution in that road mapping space. These vendors are aligning themselves with SAP and co-development activities on the product line. So the SIs tend to have a bias in that space. for the products that they're actually developing. The other area that we're seeing activities from the SIs are in the development of specific tools to help automate the conversion. And we're actually seeing that now through Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3. Fujitsu just came out with an offering primarily focused on the 2,000 SAP users over in Japan, specifically on the tool sets themselves. You know, if we look across all of the providers right now, I would say that both you know, the traditional big ones, Accenture, Deloitte, EY, PwC, all have S/4HANA offerings that are reasonably mature.
Well, thanks, John. Appreciate it. Good insights. Obviously, a lot to cover in terms of, you know, defining what that journey would look like. In terms of the next generation SAP agreement, what I'm going to cover off on here is really what does the opportunity look like? You know, as SAP is coming to market in the way that Dave described, there are certain opportunities that exist based upon each platform. I'm going to speak primarily from a commercial perspective. The one thing that I would say, though, is that there's an opportunity from a relationship perspective. You know, there are, you know, many of our clients that have not nurtured necessarily their relationship with SAP for a number of different reasons. And I think one of the things, in addition to the planning your negotiation, your sourcing strategy, is also outlining how you want to engage with SAP. That's kind of a topic for a different day as it relates to the people, but there's been a significant amount of organizational change within SAP. And I think it's important for clients to understand that as they determine how they want to engage and how they want to build relationships. But I'm going to focus very specifically, if we could go to the next slide, on what are the typical commercial and pricing matters that, you know, the executive team needs to be taking into consideration. And the first one is with respect to the digital core. Certainly there's been new pricing models that have been rolled out with the S/4HANA. Finance is revenue-based now. There are certain new add-on modules and pricing metrics that have been introduced. Gaining a general familiarity with the pricing and packaging is absolutely, you know, critical. The other opportunity that exists is reflecting on your existing on-prem agreements, right? Certain terms are certainly out of market potentially or have expired. Many organizations, just through pure M&A-related type of activity, will need to go through some sort of consolidation exercise. And, you know, there's a lot of upfront work that will be required in order to address how you want to migrate not only your platform, but also your agreements moving forward. The other thing that we found very interesting is when we're doing license entitlement assessments versus utilization, on average, we've seen about 30 to 35% underutilization with an existing on-prem agreement. And I think one of the opportunities that exists, and SAP does have the programs for this, provided, one, you're aware of them, and two, you negotiate them, an opportunity to address that underutilization as you're migrating to the cloud. And that could be done in the form of particular elements around termination, exchanges, or leveraging, you know, other programs that SAP certainly offers. So they're prepared to address the underutilization, provided you're educated and go, and you have a basis of understanding of not only the business practices, but also what your current utilization looks like. The other thing that is really important at this stage to do is to take a look at your audit exposure or your indirect access exposure. And certainly, you know, this has been, you know, well talked about in the industry. We've written about it extensively, and we've got separate webinars on that. So I'm not going to get into a lot of detail, but at this stage, understanding what your compliance position looks like and your posture, both currently and in the future, relative to indirect access is going to be a key aspect of your strategy. Moving on to the cloud line of business that Dave outlined. You know, John mentioned this too. You know, there are a number of different business executives that are interfacing with SAP, appropriately so, you know, through different solution sets, whether it's, you know, Concur, Ariba, SuccessFactors, and so on. You know, I would say that the number one issue that we're running into right now is organizations organizing themselves in such a way that they even understand what the current state of these relationships look like between their internal stakeholders as well as their SAP counterparts. And, you know, there's different procurement people that are assigned to support those business units. The CIO may or may not have visibility into the nature of that relationship that exists today. So as John mentions, is kind of the CIO being the chief collaborator, you know, there may or may not be, in our experience, an appetite for, you know, those business leads to look to present themselves holistically. And there's certainly some, you know, internal navigation that has to occur, and I'll talk more about that. But that can't be underestimated. More tactically speaking, there's, you know, decisions that are going to have to be made relative to defining what your risks and opportunities are on each of these different agreements. Some of our clients have legacy agreements with the originating entity that SAP acquired, and making a determination as to whether or not you want to move over to SAP's paper has pros and cons to it. I mean, one of the pros is that SAP will contribute some of the subscription revenue associated with these platforms to your PSLE contribution amount. So there are certain advantages of doing so. Conversely, there's also a risk profile. You know, there might be certain, you know, security and indemnification and limits to liability type provisions that might change the risk profile of what you had previously versus what SAP might be willing to do today. The other aspect is license grants and use rights, right? There's certainly, as there would be with any acquisition, repackaging, repricing that's going to occur, and understanding the business practices and the commercial terms that you had under the prior agreement versus what they're going to potentially look like moving forward is key. And then the other aspect is just, you know, understanding how you might transition out of unlimited license agreements, right? There are certain situations where you might have very flexible ULAs related to a particular platform. And in SAP's case, they may, one, want to transition you over to that paper. They might not feel that that deal really was a favorable deal for them, you know, given the nature of what the acquired entity provided to you previously. And they want to change the go-forward pricing structure. An example of that will be on Hybris, right? Hybris is going from a CPU-based to a revenue-based licensing model. Ariba just recently changed some of their pricing packages. So, you know, understanding the internal landscape and, you know, weaving that into your roadmap, as John outlined, but understanding the commercial implications up front is definitely key to, you know, your strategy. Relative to the cloud platform, you know, as Dave mentioned, this is going to be foundational for all SAP solutions moving forward. You know, for the most part, you know, we've been spending a lot of time, what I would say would be on the HANA side of things, right? The runtime versus the full use. You know, what are the implications from a licensing standpoint? What are the implications of, you know, growth? You know, HANA runtimes based on a percentage of revenue, a percentage of your software asset value. The enterprise or full use license is going to be based upon, you know, utilization based upon gigabytes. You know, so there's considerations that need to be made there. I would say what would be really interesting for me moving forward on this is, as SAP comes with additional solutions within this space, how do they address the consumption-based pricing that they just recently announced? What is the pricing and packaging going to look like moving forward? Most of this is subscription or consumption-based, which is going to hit your OPEX. And, you know, having been a former procurement and finance, you know, executive on the other side of the fence, you know, being able to predict my operating expenses is really important. And I think one of the big longer-term call-outs is, at least in my experience, being able to plan capital expenditures as part of the planning cycle has always been a pretty predictable type of activity. There's a process for it. But the one part that that concerns me here is, you know, one, clients understanding the breadth of the packaging and the breadth of the offering that SAP is offering here. But secondly, also understanding how they're going to measure the impact to their OPEX, given that this is going to be consumption-based, based upon units. I mean, a lot of companies are struggling just to track users, let alone a real-time consumption-based model. So that'll be something I think is going to be a major call-out for folks moving forward as this platform expands over time. Accelerating just quickly into services, and I'm gonna touch upon this just in the interest of time very quickly. You know, SAP has invested a lot of time with their One Service initiative. They've done a very good job of increasing their margin in services. They've been packaging solutions as opposed to selling services on a time materials type basis. I think, as John mentioned, understanding the role that SAP will play vis-a-vis, say, Max Attention versus an SI role or versus the role that you're going to play is absolutely going to be critical. The other thing that I think is really important to understand is, you know, we've seen clients that are looking to SAP from a professional services standpoint to drive outcomes. And I think it's really, there's an expectation that needs to be set there, right? You know, that what you can receive from an SI versus what you can receive from SAP relative to what they'll sign up to from a professional services standpoint, that needs to be flushed out up front before you get too deep into leaning on SAP for services. If you're truly looking for outcomes versus complementary type solutions on the professional services side, you might have your expectations too high. And then lastly, we're seeing a lot of companies, you know, cross the threshold of PSLE versus our enterprise support versus the preferred care, and understanding the differences between those solution sets and how SAP weaves in Max Attention is absolutely something that we'd advise our clients to go deeper on.
Hey, Len, this is Dave. Real quick before we move forward, just interject. We've got two different questions, but I think they're linked to your prior slide. So the first question is if we can just very briefly explain the difference between HANA runtime versus a full use license, and then certainly given SAP's approach to open data sources, specifically with HANA, you know, what's our point of view as far as a word of caution relative to indirect access?
Yeah, so on the first one, the runtime is just strictly just for the database platform use of your SAP solutions versus the full-time being able to support third-party applications as well. One of them is priced based upon a percentage of your software asset value. So when we talked about utilization and underutilization, rationalizing your underutilization is absolutely critical before you go out and purchase HANA, because you'll be paying a premium based upon, you know, licenses that you may or may not be using. Conversely, on the enterprise version that could be used for both SAP and non-SAP solutions, that is based upon gigabytes. So one of the things, or the word of caution there, is just your scale and your sizing requirements. We're seeing a lot of companies set up sidecars for the enterprise edition and running them and kind of dipping their toe in the water on that. And relative to the last question that you had, Dave, you know, we definitely have a word of caution across the board relative to indirect access. I think it's, for us, it's pretty predictable to understand what SAP is looking for relative to solutions that are competing with the application line of business applications. You know, how they're addressing Salesforce, how they're addressing, potentially Workday or other competing type solutions that are interfacing and having bi-directional type of interfacing with SAP. The part that I would say relative to the cloud solution and that the cloud platform, rather, supporting third-party solutions, that's TBD in my mind. I think we've got a lot that we can point to relative to prior history on the line of business applications, but how it's handled at the database layer for that platform as it expands and supports potentially third-party solutions, I think is definitely something that we need to keep a close eye on.
Great. Thanks, Len.
So real quick, because I want to leave time for questions and getting to the last section of our go-forward plan here. you know, we have to do a call out here to the legal folks and the procurement folks in the organization, because I think one of the major things that people don't understand is just the breadth of the contracting work that's required post your commercial negotiation. You know, there's a lot of work to be done relative to your on-prem GTCs, your cloud GTCs, all the services that we talked about. There's a lot of underlying forms and agreements that need to be understood. And, you know, really the business needs to take responsibility for understanding the business practices that are within these forms. It's just not a legal and a procurement exercise per se. You really need to understand, you know, what is in these supporting attachments. So, you know, we just want to make a quick call out for people to really understand the breadth and scope of the contractual side of this, because it's short-shifted in a lot of cases in terms of the negotiation process. What Dave, John, and I wanted to kind of talk through was from the perspective, you know, from Dave's point of view strategically, from John's point of view as a CIO, and from my point of view from a procurement and finance standpoint, how do we bring together a strategy at a conceptual level to navigate the path forward? So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. If you go to the next slide, you know, you'll see here the first major point that we have is the initiation and strategy phase. So, you know, what we're referring to there on the outcome is how do we align internally the business objectives overall. Now, that's going to be an evolving process, right, as we all know. But, you know, initiating up front and getting those line of business executives identified is really critical. You know, who are the stakeholders? What's the scope? And, you know, is the IT or is the CIO going to be empowered by those business leaders to truly be, you know, the chief collaborator and to drive the interfacing discussion with SAP? And most importantly, does SAP believe that, right? I mean, they're interfacing and have relationships with all those line of business executives. They will do it. They will continue to do it. But is the CIO truly empowered and aligned with the rest of the organization is really the key. After you've received kind of the steps one and two and you've mobilized, aligned internally, we definitely see an opportunity here. And I'd refer to the first step three as initial discovery. Without question, there's opportunity to interface with SAP and with your key partners to conduct strategy workshops. You know, SAP is more than willing, obviously, to do them in the U.S., in Waldorf. Our clients are doing that on a pretty regular basis to get educated. There's an initial level of investment that I think SAP is willing to make, the SIs are willing to make, and that should be embraced. Relative to the SAP assessment itself, you know, there's absolutely an opportunity, I think, from both an IT perspective and from a commercial standpoint to do a diagnostic, if you will, of what you think the risks and opportunities are vis-a-vis your existing relationship. And I spoke about a lot of those from a commercial standpoint, and I think John would speak to many more relative to just your technology roadmap and how that would impact your business. But having that perspective is absolutely critical. I think it's very much an internal exercise, but also could be complemented by step three as well. The fifth step that we're identifying here is the sourcing strategy. Yeah, and what we refer to here is kind of an integrated sourcing strategy across the board. And John spoke about this. There are going to be implications given the way that SAP is coming to market, not only on your SAP solution, but also on potentially competing cloud solutions, your infrastructure, the run support that you would do from both an infrastructure and from an application support perspective. Having a point of view on what you think that sourcing strategy would look like and how those relationships and how that process is going to work up front, we think is absolutely critical. I think in a lot of cases, clients get single-threaded with one particular track of discussion and then kind of handle the rest on an ad hoc basis. We definitely would advocate up front, trying to get as much visibility into what you think that process would be and being proactive there. Proceeding on to, you know, steps six, seven, and eight, we think after a client has a good lay of the land relative to the first five steps, going out and sourcing, an engaging consulting provider, right? So, and Dave mentioned this phase zero activity. We found this to be very effective in terms of identifying the business case, the implementation plan, your software requirements, your operational steady state requirements. In doing so, you know, in parallel with your software sourcing execution, where we see things kind of go a little bit awry is when the software negotiation starts to move further upstream in the sequence, and clients really don't know what they want to buy, how much of it they need, as well as what their expectations are of both SAP and the SI, as well as being able to consider competing solutions during that process. So what we have found to be extremely effective is conducting that phase zero activity. You'll notice here that steps 1, 7, and 8 are completely aligned. So you're kind of evolving your strategy over time, getting more comfortable with your strategy, informing the strategy with all the inputs up above, but also conducting that phase zero in such a way that, you know, top to bottom, from a board level all the way down, that you have top to bottom alignment before you proceed into step 9, which is setting your organization up for, you know, an effective implementation phase. And you've got that top to bottom alignment as you go. So, you know, I know there's a lot of information there. I really appreciate everybody's time today, and I hope you found that to be valuable. I'm going to flip it back to Amy and Dave, because I think we have some questions that we can use the remainder of the time for.
Len, will you just touch on kind of the recommended path forward and at least, you know, customers' approach to making the journey and shift to S/4HANA? What would you say is probably the number one challenge that they experience from a process and commercial perspective?
Yes, thanks, Dave. I think that the number one item is understanding internally how you're going to align your stakeholders, right? There's a lot of internal work that has to be done up front with, you know, building those internal relationships, setting that strategy, and getting alignment internally. And then from a process standpoint, this can kind of go one of two ways, and I don't mean this in a negative way. You can either set a process for yourself and your organization, or SAP or the SI will set that process for you. And, you know, you might get a successful outcome, but we feel going in, you know, following others' leads, but we feel that, you know, defining your process up front and kind of being proactive with that as an approach versus aligning solely to an agenda of others. They're important partners. What they have in their input is critical, but, you know, you kind of understanding what your internal process would look like and taking that to your partners and getting input based upon your structure versus following someone else's structure that might not have the full context or is, you know, driving to an agenda that might be slightly different from yours in the short term. Those are the two number one things that I would recommend clients try to tackle right up front.
Thanks, Len. And Len, I got another one here from one of the attendees. Again, I think it's probably more in your space. Is just can you add a little bit more color on SAP's cloud extension program?
Yeah. So the cloud, there's two aspects to the program. There's the on-premise extension program, and then there's the cloud extension program. And effectively, what this allows for is clients that have underutilization to trade in certain licenses and effectively terminate them as they're moving to new solutions that SAP is coming out and offering. So it's definitely a negotiated type of item. I wouldn't say it's a highly publicized program, but it's one where, if navigated appropriately, could be certainly beneficial to offset your underutilization within your install base today.
Thanks, Len. I think that may be it for the questions right now. Well, we've got another one here. In our experience, what's the most common type or likely type of conversion to S4? So, John, this probably is a bit more for you, kind of given the project execution advisory work we've been doing. But why don't you touch a little bit about the different methods and certainly what we've seen, at least within our customer base?
Yeah, thanks. I think we have to be cautious on this question because I'm not sure if history gives us a good view of the future. But historically, what we've seen is customers making a move to from their business suite to a business suite on HANA platform, meaning that they're making the conversion to the database first so that they get experiences with the, I'll call it, with the infrastructure, the hardware, and managing that HANA on those HANA appliances, and then attaching I'll call it the sidecar of, let's say, S/4HANA on the side in order to be able to get some experience for the S/4HANA in the finance or simple finance. I think over time we're going to see that strategy change, where I'm going to call it a skip step, where companies will not be moving necessarily first to the S/4HANA platform as a database, but going more directly to the S/4HANA suite. And I think we'll see that as the industry solutions that are being developed by SAP and the systems integrators become more mature. So I think we have to be cautious, not necessarily to look at history as the way that these migrations are going to take place in the future.
No, I appreciate that, John. And certainly I think if you look at kind of Len's recommended path forward, certainly there's a lot of organizations that have been doing some initial phase zeros, leveraging, you know, different consulting partners to do basically a study of what's the best path forward for that particular client, given every client's situation is somewhat different based on how they previously deployed and certainly what their future roadmap looks like. So certainly can appreciate that. First off, let me just say fantastic job, Len. Great job, John. I think you guys pulled together a tremendously valuable webinar for our attendees. And certainly for those attendees, if you found value in our webinar, certainly would appreciate you sharing it with your colleagues where it would be relevant for them and where they would find value in it. And then certainly if post our webinar today you have questions on our methodology, our approach for helping clients make this journey with SAP as well as with their corresponding implementation partners, do not hesitate to reach out to Amy, and Amy can certainly put you in touch with both John and Len for more intimate discussions, more targeted discussions for your particular situation. So again, thank you very much, and certainly we're very pleased that we were able to pull this webinar off right in the middle of a big nor'easter here in Boston. So kudos to the team that pulled this off.